Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Cause. You get the Pelicans playing tonight. You get the Heat and Boston. The Pelicans OKC game, that one's fun. Boston and Miami, not as much. Boston's like favored by 14.5. And I'm throwing this out there. The other options when the Leaf game is on commercial, if you want to look for somewhere else, I usually heading over to the NBA playoffs. Join us now to talk all things NBA, but really not as much of a preview of tonight's games. It is James Herbert, NBA writer with CBS Sports. James, thanks so much for joining the show today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, let's start here. A day has passed. And what did you make of LeBron and Anthony Davis's reaction after that last-second loss to Denver? Now, my take is, it's not that they were upset, the officials, but I'm sure they weren't thrilled, but is they realize, wait a minute, I don't think we have a chance to overcome Denver. Am I overthinking it?
No, I mean, I think you're right on. I mean, I don't know if they would say now that they feel like they don't have a chance, right? I mean, these are some of the most competitive people on earth. Like, when they go into these games, I think they do believe they can win. But they know what it's been like playing against Denver over the past, you know, year or so. I mean, that was, I mean, people in Los Angeles will point at the fact it was a quote unquote close sweep, but it was still a sweep. In the playoffs, and Denver had its way with the Lakers throughout the regular season as well. Like, the Nuggets are an extremely tough matchup. They're also a particularly tough team to deal with in crunch time. I mean, their execution level is unparalleled. And the Lakers were actually in a position, where if Jamal Murray had missed that shot on the baseline, they would have had a chance to pull that game out in overtime. And if the Nuggets hadn't scored on something like 13 of 14 possessions or whatever it was in the fourth quarter, like, Los Angeles could have had it in regulation. And I think that's why they end up making such a big deal of like an uncalled foul, against D'Angelo Russell that was like actually way earlier in the game.
Yeah.
Not something that'll be part of the last 2 minute report or anything like that. Is just, they know how hard it is to even be in a close game against Denver. I think they and most of the league, they kind of know, like, if you don't have a comfortable lead when Jokic checks back into the game after his rest at the beginning of the fourth quarter, you're probably going to lose. Because Denver, I mean, we had a recent counterexample near the end of the regular season against San Antonio, but, like, that was a huge outlier. Like, generally speaking, the Nuggets are the most sort of deliberate, the most sort of cohesive, the most sort of surgical team when it gets down to those big time moments, when it gets a little bit slower and you have to, you know, you go to your bread and butter, and the Nuggets' bread and butter is, you know, Jamal Murray and Jokic playing a two-man game that nobody has been able to solve, obviously the Lakers included.
It's incredible. Since the start of the playoffs last year, Denver has gone 18-4, and Jokic is averaging 30 points, 15 rebounds, 9 assists, shooting over 56%. I mean, that is a remorseless, yeah, efficient killing machine.
Yeah, I mean, and it feels like he never misses a floater. Like, the yeah, shot that opposing teams are typically trying to give up, that even you give up to stars, you know, we get a contest up there, but that's better than him getting all the way to the rim. That's better than giving up a wide open three-pointer or a kick-out three-pointer to one of the guys standing out there. But no, like, Jokic, for like something like three consecutive years, is shooting above 60% on those shots. I mean, it looks automatic. His touch is unreal. Like, genuinely, like, touch that I have never seen in my life, especially coming from a guy that size. Like, it is remarkable. He's an extremely difficult to guard player. Anthony Davis is one of the best defensive players in the world, and it's not just last night. Like, the last few years, if you look at the matchups between the Nuggets and the Lakers, Davis has had nothing for Jokic. Like, individually, there are very few people who can even make him the slightest bit uncomfortable, because he makes shots that, typically speaking, opposing teams want other players to take, but every shot that Jokic takes is, like, relatively high efficiency. Like, that's how good the touch is.
The Lakers and LeBron, that might be the top story. But, James, I'm wondering, is the biggest thing right now Maybe because it's such a huge city and the history in the past, but it's been decades of futility. I say this as a Knicks fan. I remember where I was when Larry Johnson had that 4-point play against the Pacers in the 1999 Eastern Conference Finals. I know exactly where I was, which is kind of sad. But is like the vibes right now in New York with the Knicks, is this the best it's been in a quarter century?
Yeah, I mean, look, I live in New York. I've only been here for the last, like, 7 years or so. Like, I haven't seen, you know, that many good Knicks teams since I have been here, really. But it's insane. I mean, the noise level at these playoff games, the intensity when big moments happen, like, it is, like, I'm sure it comes through on the television, but in person, it's really wild. And that's not to say that you're not seeing similar stuff happen. I mean, if you look at what the environment was like for Oklahoma City's first home playoff game in years, like that was an electric atmosphere too. But having seen what was immediately like a historic playoff moment, the end of that last game, game two against the Sixers, and just the sort of ecstasy of those thousands of fans in the arena who were staying after the buzzer to chant Dante DiVincenzo's name to the point where, like, I could not hear what DiVincenzo was saying in his post-game interview, despite the fact that they were blasting it out of the public address system in the arena. Like, that was something else. And everybody is chanting as I'm trying to get back to the press room and get down to where the interview area is. I'm like going through these Knicks fans who are in the little stairwell to try to get down. They're yelling and screaming and laughing and chanting and saying to each other they can't believe what they just saw. And then they're doing that as they leave the arena. I saw the videos that we've seen, you know, in the past few years when they've had any degree of playoff success. They're chanting and screaming and going crazy, like outside of Penn Station, outside the arena. Like they are really latching onto this team. And you do understand it, right? Like, even if you hate the Knicks, it's hard to hate this team.
Yeah.
Like, they play extremely hard. It's a bunch of underdog stories. It's a bunch of guys who were drafted outside of the lottery. Literally everybody, because Julius Randle is not healthy and not a part of this run, really. Everybody's drafted outside of the lottery. It's a team that is clearly more than the sum of its parts. It's a team that has just, like, repeatedly finds ways to win. Like, they should not have won game two. They stole that at the very end.
And oh, yeah.
It's far from the first time that I've seen that happen at MSG this season.
Now, whatever. The Knicks have had such horrible luck for the past 25 years. Actually, what was that? What were those final 50 seconds like? And you're right. That game was officiated. It was mid-90s basketball. Not only were the whistles swallowed, they were thrown out of the arena. What were those final 50 seconds like at MSG?
I mean, it was hard to believe what you were watching as it was happening because the story changed so drastically so quickly. What it seemed like was going to happen was the Sixers were going to even the series, and they were going to do it in a pretty dramatic and interesting way. Like, they did not get the sort of contributions up and down the roster. You had their obviously injured franchise player who's battling through it. But in the fourth quarter, because I think it was physically worrying on him, he was deferring to the guy who just the next day or 2 days afterward would win most improved player. And he himself, Tyrese Maxey, was obviously ill. Like, he didn't show up at shoot around in the morning. He was questionable going into the game. I'm sure, like, on the broadcast, they showed him, like, coughing and just sort of looking sick on the sideline and stuff. But he played an absolutely incredible game. Like, he was just repeatedly getting into the Knicks, into the teeth of the defense, getting into the paint, making difficult shots, creating easy shots, and he had a huge start to the game, and it looked like he was going to close the game, too. Like, he had had an amazing fourth quarter, and to me, that was going to be the story, was, like, the Sixers pulling it out, despite the fact their two main guys were out of sorts physically. They basically carried them to a win, and then so quickly everything went wrong. Like, it took a variety of things happening. I mean, Kyle Lowry he split a pair of free throws late, and then you have all of the sort of controversial stuff, which is either miraculous from the Knicks' perspective or, like, this sort of shameful black eye on the NBA from Philadelphia's perspective,
get out of here.
Where Nurse is trying to call a timeout, He doesn't get it. You have a foul that, I mean, clearly a foul that goes uncalled, but then the Knicks have to make play. Like, Jalen Brunson had a huge shot. Dante DiVincenzo made a huge shot. Hardenstein, a huge offensive rebound, and the Knicks managed to just snatch defeat, snatch victory from the jaws of defeat.
That's a hard cliche, or that's a hard expression to do. I screw it up all the time.
I'm usually doing the opposite one.
Yeah. From CBS Sports NBA writer James Herbert. All right, James, more likely to come back from being down 0-2, the Philadelphia 76ers that Joel Embiid says we're winning the series, or the Phoenix Suns who lose 105-93 to Minnesota, where their offense saw Beal, Durant, and Booker. They all played at least 41 minutes. They shot 18 of 45 for 52 points. Just stunning, but more likely to come back. Phoenix against Minnesota or Philly against the Knicks?
I think if you're going to make the argument for Phoenix, it would have to be this sort of like, I don't know that the Sixers will have the endurance and they'll be able to get through that series. But I think just based on how the first two games have gone, you have to go with Philadelphia. I mean, those two games have been extremely close. They've gone down to the wire. For the Sixers, I think they played better in the second game than they did in the first. They, the last 30, 50 seconds of the game excluded, they did not get dominated on the glass like they did in game one. They changed the rotations in ways that I thought were pretty smart and effective. They weren't completely annihilated in the Embiid minutes like they were in game one. Like, this is a long way of saying, I think the Sixers did figure some things out in game two. And I do think talent-wise, most people would probably say if they were completely full strength, and that means like Embiid at full strength too, like the Sixers like would have the edge going into that series. I think a lot of people did pick the Sixers to win that series. I did at first, and then I backed out and changed it at the last second after I saw how Embiid looked at the play-in. I was just sort of scared.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we've seen Embiid play really well. We've seen Maxey play really well. It is going to be a long and kind of arduous road, I think. It'll be very difficult. You don't want to be down 2-0, but I do think, just based on what we've seen so far, they have had more answers than the Suns have appeared to have.
Last question for you. One of the series that a lot of people are interested in, certainly myself, was Clippers and the Mavericks. They get Kawhi back, but LA still loses. Maybe the most remarkable thing, did you expect Dallas would win because of Luka's defense? Where you, like, all the statistics show that when he was the primary defender, Clippers shot 2 of 17. He did a great job on Harden. Like, that was like one of the number one headlines, is Dallas wins because what Luka did on D.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have predicted that. No. I mean, I do think this has been the best defensive year of his career, but I didn't expect that, like, help side block that Doncic had in that game. James Harden, by the way, had one as well, so that part was interesting, too. But, no, I mean, I thought the Mavericks defense in general got better in the second game. The Clippers, it's always sort of tricky when you're integrating another super high usage player who you've been without his services for a few weeks. So I didn't just assume, oh, Kawhi's back, they're automatically going to be 10 times better than they were in game one when they did look really good. But, you know, I do think these teams are very evenly matched. I do think they both have a lot of firepower offensively. I think just generally speaking, the offense on both sides has been worse than I thought it would be through two games. And if Dallas can get that kind of defense, not just out of Doncic individually, but just like their team defense, and if they can limit the Clippers like they did, particularly in the fourth quarter of last night's game, then I think they'll be in a pretty good position going forward.
James, where can people read you?
At CBSSports.com in the NBA section. Going to have lots of stuff from this Knicks-Sixers series, and I just had something on Jordy Fernandez, the coach of the Canadian national team, who's introduced in Brooklyn today.
That's right, the future gold medal winning coach of the Canadian men's basketball team, who is now the coach of the... By the way, I can't wait for that. Honestly, like the Olympic basketball this year is going to be ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, as a Canadian myself, I'm extremely pumped to see what happens. I'm extremely pumped to see, even like I want to see what the French team looks like. Like that could be really cool. I mean, we're going to see a really good tournament.
Yeah. James, appreciate it. Thanks for being on the show today.